You really want to be taking the sale as a means to getting the next sale. And if that can be done through effective email engagement with them, they bought something from you. Can we send you some information on this through email? If you or some other reason for encouraging them to give you your email address. At that moment, they like they've just bought something from you. So they're going to be in a receptive mood to do stuff with you. And then just send them a thank you email. Don't bombard them, but maybe in a week or two or however long, or whatever's reasonable in your business mode, then engage with them and make contact again. You're establishing a relationship there, and that kind of goes back to numerous episodes we've had on this podcast before of building engagement with customers, and that's one of the best promotional methods you can do.
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next event on the card is a heavyweight marketing bout for the small to medium business owner. In the red corner, from Paradise, Australia, is David. And in the blue corner, from an English paradise, is David.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of David versus David, the podcast for the small and medium business owner, the entrepreneur, the marketer, and so on, who is looking for discussion, advice, input on the topics and issues that are facing you week in, week out in growing your business, maintaining your business, and getting to where we want to be tomorrow or next year or at 5 years' time. My name's David Pritchard here in the UK, and my co-host on this episode is, as always, David Council down in sunny Tasmania. How are you doing, David?
I'm good, mate. It's another great day here in paradise, and always a good day to be talking about marketing. And I think today we have got an absolute winner. So whatever you're doing, if you're on the treadmill, get your iPhone out or your Android out and make sure you make notes during this one, because there is marketing gold about to come out for the next 30 minutes.
Absolutely. It's very common. I mean, you have lots of small businesses. They're all competing for the same clients in many cases. You know, you're trying to get people to come to your business and spend money with you rather than go anywhere else, of course. So we're talking this week about ideas to promote your business, to get people coming your way, to get people spending money in your shop. Some of the things that work, some of the things that perhaps don't work so well, some of the things to just beware of before you think it's the great idea that will win out for you, and there may be some caveats just to beware of. David, we've got loads of ideas here, loads of things to chat at, and I suggest that perhaps we'll go through them fairly quickly rather than labour on any of them for too long. So the first one, perhaps the most obvious one, is have a sale, as in reduce your prices or, you know, have a special event, price reduction for a limited period, whatever.
Not one of my favourites, though. We're not very big fans of discounting, you know, just to attract it. You use a sale, it's a strategic tool. So you use it, you get in, you use the fact that it's for an extremely limited amount of time, because the longer you let it go on, the more you're actually eroding your bottom line, and then you get out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's perhaps one of the most obvious things to do is reduce prices. But of course, you know, unless it's stuff that you want to get rid of, stock that's been lingering around for far too long, end of line stuff, whatever, you are going to be reducing your margins on regular items. And I think this is the caveat, really. If you overdo sales, if you make them too regular, if you make them too often, you cheapen the product, you cheapen your store, you cheapen your brand. But people come to expect that they will always be able to get the products from you at a lower price. You will associate yourself with cheapness. And that's not a good thing to do.
No, you're training discount buyers then. You're training them only to come back for that reason.
Yeah, indeed. I see this a lot online. You'll see coupon codes, enter a coupon code here, enter a promotional code here. So, you know, you get to that point in the checkout, and then first thing you do is, oh, gee, they've mentioned there's a coupon code, they've mentioned there's a promotional code, I'll go off and hunt around for a promo code. So first of all, you know, online, you're actually encouraging people away from your site at the crucial moment that they're just about to buy something from you, and then you're encouraging them to spend less with you. Now, you know, sometimes that's great on a limited basis, just don't overdo it. Don't associate yourself or your brand with discounts and cheapness.
Absolutely.
So the alternative to that, of course, is to increase value. Mm. So yeah, instead of cheapening the brand, instead of giving away money, what else can you do instead? And one of the options is to offer a freebie, perhaps offer us a free sample to get people enticed into using the product.
Or as we like to think of it, value add.
Absolutely. And it's why people give away, you know, perfume samples and that kind of thing. Or perhaps bundle more than one product together. Perhaps you have a product that you're happy to give away if somebody buys your main product or a more profitable item. So, you know, buy this product, which by the way happens to be quite profitable for us, and get this one free, which actually we're not that bothered about. So, you know, that's a much better way of adding value, adding perceived value to the customer. They get more for the same money, and you're actually doing quite nicely too out of it.
And you know who does this really well? People who market to women. Cosmetic companies, in fact, possibly the best that I've ever seen at doing this, because while they're selling you face powder or moisturizer on one hand, they're giving you a sample of something else on the other hand, because what they really want you to do is just go away, and they'll give you the full spiel on what it's supposed to do. You know, so they're doing that before sales stuff. They're giving you the information on what you can expect from using this product. And of course, they're almost building expectation into your mind by doing that.
Absolutely.
You go away and go, oh yes, it has done that. I look 10% more beautiful, and you come back and buy it again.
Yeah.
You know, so it's giving you that next sale just by giving away a little sample.
Absolutely. I mean, whenever I bought anything at the beauty clinic counter for my wife, I hasten to add, as a present, Christmas, Valentine's Day, whatever.
Sure.
Absolutely, sure. They will do one of two things. They will either stick a free sample of another product in there, as you've mentioned, or aimed at her. Or quite cleverly sometimes, they'll stick a free sample of an aftershave in aimed at me. They get two customers coming back then, not just
absolutely.
The one. So, you know, a much better way to do something. Another option is a trade-in. You know, swap to us and don't go back.
Oh, yeah.
It's basically what you're saying. You're looking at people here. If you're offering a trade-in, you are going to get something from a potential customer who has already investigated and purchase something in your marketplace. You're not having to necessarily convince them of the benefits of the generic product in general, but you are just encouraging them to switch to your brand. So, you know, you've maybe done a lot of the hard work. Maybe you've digital cameras, something like that, or mobile phones, or da-di-da-di-da.
I've got a really good example. A mobile phone, that's the example, because think about it. The big game changer was the iPhone, and so many people bought that first iPhone, and all of the apps are Apple apps. So they've got you. You're part of their environment when you use their apps. So all of the other people who make Android phones can't use those apps. So what they do is they use trade-ins, basically, where you can take your old apps and convert them to their equivalent app using their store at sometimes no extra cost. It's a fantastic way to get you to come across, because while ever you've got an investment in the environment that is Apple, it's so much harder for them to break you away. Because at the end of the day, think about how many people make Android phones, and none of them own the environment because it's all Windows based.
Yep.
You know, the big winner out of it is Windows, because they're getting you to, you know, use product that they've got an investment in, as opposed to Apple, where it's 100% of the stuff that's going through that Apple store, Apple is making an earner off. I saw somewhere, and I honestly can't remember what it was, but the income that Apple derives just from that iTunes store where you buy all of your apps is a frightening number. It's bigger than the gross national product of some countries.
Sorry, that's just an aside here, but I love it when you hear stories of this large company or that large company having more sales than the GDP of small countries around the world. Sometimes they're quite large, actually, but frighteningly.
Liechtenstein or somewhere like that, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, sorry, we promised to each other we weren't going to do this week, but...
No. Hey, can I do a couple?
Yeah, go on then.
I've got a couple, because there's a couple that I think are pretty cool and a couple that I think are pretty ordinary. I'll give you the ordinary one first. Frequent shopper cards. You know what? If you're huge, if you're Tesco's or somewhere like that, or Woolworths or, you know, Coles, frequent shopper cards are sensational. Mm-hmm. But you're a big enough company to have the infrastructure to run it. If you're a local hi-fi store or a local furniture store, you don't have the infrastructure. And I think a lot of people get sucked into thinking, oh yeah, I've got to have a frequent shopper card because they work really well.
Yep.
Bobble. Mm-hmm. You don't need that. All you're really doing when you've got a frequent shopper card is having an environment to hold your database in. So at the heart of it, you've just got to develop a database. Use something that's going to allow you to do that without having to add cost on top by having to buy the plastic cards or, you know, buy the system that will allow you to do it. And that brings me to the next part, which is market to targeted groups. So go inside your database and look at those people and make offers to only specific groups that belong to part of your database. There's nothing in the world that says that you have to make one offer to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
So don't do it.
Yeah, indeed. That's a good point.
Market just a little bit.
Yes, that's a good point you made about the loyalty cards and so on and the scale of business, because a lot of small businesses, they use loyalty cards as, you know, buy 10, get one free, yeah, just to get you coming back, which is kind of fair enough, or you build up a sort of points towards future purchases and so on. But really, you're probably not not big enough to make the connections between lots of different products, as opposed to somebody like Tesco's and the supermarkets that have ranges of thousands, then, and they really have enough statistical data because of the number and frequency of goods that somebody buys in a store to actually build up profiles and pictures of what these people are buying. And you know, you're absolutely right, what I get in the post or what I get whenever I check out, you know, you get the coupons. Those coupons offering you a discount of this or, you know, extra points on your card if you come back and buy three of these and so on, they're so specifically targeted to you. That's what encourages you to come back and work well. If you're going into a smaller store that has a more limited range of items, furniture or household goods, I don't know, whatever, the ability of the store to really profile the buying habits of that customer are going to be a bit more limited. The only one that might work is something, say, where you make regular frequent purchases and you want to keep that customer coming back. So perhaps you get this a lot with cafes and coffee shops, which, as listeners to previous episodes may be aware, I frequent quite a lot, and maybe too often. If somebody's offering a tenth coffee free when you've purchased nine, hey, why not? And it'll keep me going back there, perhaps, as long as the other factors are good, like the environment and so on that I sit in.
We do plenty of those, David.
Yeah, absolutely. You just have to be careful about what you're offering with a loyalty card and why, and what the benefits are going to be, how you can actually use them effectively, which you raised there at the beginning of that one.
So. Yeah, but that type of loyalty card's the one where you, mm-hmm. the back of a business card size set up with little squares and you just punch holes. They're not really loyalty cards.
No.
And the downside of those is, of course, that you don't know anything about those people because you've just given them a card. The thing to remember is, if you're trying to build loyalty, you need to have the data, you need to know who they are so that you can go back and market to them repeatedly. Otherwise, they walk away with their little punch card and they keep coming back, you know. But what happens if they get halfway through the card and they lose interest, or someone attracts them with something else? You've got no mechanism then to go back out and talk to them and try and bring them back.
Absolutely.
That first sale is so hard to get. So, you know, capture at that point and market below the line where they can't see you. Actually, and while we're talking about below the line and you've got them actually in your store, point of sale, really important. Think about what people do when they come into your shop or into your website. You're trying to direct them through a channel to get them to a point. So if you're advertising somewhere in main media or, you know, online or wherever, or even, you know, handbills that have been handed out, and they've come to your store to buy something, don't put it right at the front.
Yeah, yeah.
Get them to walk all the way through your business. And even so, put a sign at the front that points to where you want them to go. Use oddly shaped signs. So don't just make it a rectangle, because rectangle's what you've got. You know, turn it into something that's going to draw their eye and show them where you want to go. You want to walk them through the shop or through the website to a point where they've seen something else. Now, obviously, on a website, you don't want to make them do too many clicks. That's one of the reasons why you set up shopping carts that auto-suggest.
Yeah.
You know, people who have bought this also like this.
Indeed.
But it's the same principle. So, yeah, point of sale.
And actually, kind of neatly bring me on to one of my favorites there, which is the upsell and cross-sell. Especially online, it happens in the real physical world too. The moment of purchase is when somebody is more likely to purchase something else. You know, they're in buying mode. They've just got the rush from buying something. They will be more open and persuadable to buying something else from you at that moment, especially online. It's why people like Amazon, you know, customers who bought this also bought this. But, you know, complimentary products in store, if somebody's just bought this product, is there a complimentary product that you can have near the tills or near where they're located in the store? Have your store sales staff, the till staff, trained to suggest, make suggestions. You know, would Sir like XYZ to go with product ABC? It makes sense. They make a great compliment, you know, extol the benefits of it. Quite often people don't realise that there's another product in store, you know, in which case you want to pay attention to your layout and so on, which is exactly what the online people do. Their layout, their online layout is well thought about. So, you know, you really want to think about that. It's a great moment to very, very cost effectively, from the shop owner's point of view, sell additional revenue for an item that may cost just as much as the original item that the person's buying, and with just as much profit associated with it. So loving upsell and cross-sell.
And you know what that makes me think of? A good friend of ours, James Schrenko, mm-hmm. was the king of doing this. When you've got a product that everybody else is selling and you're trying to break yourself apart, you don't want to discount it, because, you know, that's eroding your bottom line. So what James Schrenko does, and this is very common, he's not the only person to do this, is that he offers additional information with that product that will allow you to maximize your experience when you're using that product. And it relates to everything. It doesn't matter whether you're selling punnets of petunias or an online product, if you can add information as part of the sales process, so, you know, buy this for this much and I will give you this as well, I suppose it's a type of upsell. Mm-hmm. It gives them a way to maximize their experience with that product and, you know, maybe maximize the use that they get out of that product. So if you're providing that and you're seen as the person who has that knowledge, people will once again come back to you because they want that knowledge. One of the reasons that people buy stuff from you is because you're solving a problem for them. So if you're giving them this extra information that shows them how to, you know, quickly solve that problem, they don't even have to go and work it out. They can just follow a step-by-step process. You're a winner.
Absolutely.
You know, and that doesn't matter whether it's, as I said, it could be a spark plug. Hey, how do you gap a spark plug? You know, when I was working in service stations as a kid, we all knew how to gap a spark plug. These days, I think my mechanic would have a fit if I even looked like I was going to gap a spark plug.
It'd really screw with your fuel injectors for a start, mate.
But, yeah, that's right.
Anyway, okie dokie.
I should also mention, offer a guarantee.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
If you're confident in the product that you're selling, offer a guarantee. Very few people will actually end up taking you up on it. And if they do, you know what? Once again, you're solving their problem because if it's not worked for them, then you don't want them to have it because they will only be out there talking to other people or worse, posting it on forums about, you know, how they got it, bought this product from you and it didn't work. It's like, no, we'll take it back.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we'll sell it again to someone else because we will be able to give it to them and they will be able to use it.
Yeah.
You know, never be afraid to take something back. We say it in our business all the time. If we're not doing the job for you, then you should sack us. You know, that's part of our guarantee because we don't want people out there saying negative things about us. We don't want a relationship with someone where they feel that they're not getting true value.
Yeah, no, that's very important. And if you reduce the risk of somebody doing business with you, so reduce their risk, will encourage them to do business with you in the first place. The old adage, nobody ever got sacked for buying IBM. In the corporate world of computer systems that big, yeah, it might cost more, but as an IT manager, you would never lose your job for buying IBM because even if stuff didn't work, they would make sure that, you know, it did work. You were never going to put your position in jeopardy, your own reputation on the line. What they were doing basically is reducing the risk and reducing your exposure to risk. So, yeah, in the smaller world in which we operate, that guarantee, that easy returns and so on, that risk reduction will just help encourage people to do business with you and help them do business with you, which is what you want. You want to help people do business with you. Other promotional methods then, David? Yeah, good old business cards. Don't overlook them. They're great for handing out, for spreading the word, but also it's easy to lose your business card in the midst of 100 others if people at events and so on handing out cards, or use them appropriately. If you're talking to somebody and they say, oh, that sounds good, I've got a mate who would be really interested in that, that's the moment you want to be able to hand them a business card because you haven't got a direct connection with the person they're talking about at that moment in time. If you're talking to somebody, you're just going to make do with giving them a business card now, you haven't really done maybe enough to establish contact with them, engagement with them at that moment in time. You want to be encouraging the person you're talking to, if they're interested in what you have, to engage with you through a telephone call. It's almost better for you to get their business card so that you can contact them the next day because you're in control of that. By all means, give them your business card, but you really want theirs. But when they are talking to you and they have a mate, a friend, a colleague, another business that would be interested in what you have, that's the moment when business cards really come into their own. And make them different. Make them stand out a little bit. Make them a different size. Make them too big for them to stuff in a wallet and put away. Don't make them too small, perhaps, but make them different. Which brings me on to another one that I really like, which is postcards. At exhibitions and stuff like that, we give away postcards. They're too big for the Rolodex on their own, but people hang on to them, you know, or you post them and they've got all your details on them and they can forward them on to other people and so on. They work remarkably well. They're an oversized business card, in effect, and something that I love and works wonders for us.
I've got a free one. Oh, well, cents. It'll cost you cents. And that is writing on the footpath outside your business in chalk. It's just pure and simple sign writing, and people will watch it. And, you know, if you want to take that step further, if you have ever been to Sydney down to Circular Quay, you'll see that there are guys who sit on the footpath down there and they draw the most beautiful things in chalk. Really, it's just a form of busking for them. They're making their money off people, you know, tossing dollar coins into their tin. But you can employ them to come and paint that in chalk on the footpath out the front of your business with an advertising sign pointing them so that they go into your business. It is absolutely sensational and costs, you know, cents. Because it is something that you can go and do. And at the end of the day, it gets washed away overnight.
Yep.
You can go out and do it again. I would actually urge you, don't use it too much, because it is sort of shock and awe that people see that and go, oh my God, what's that? So it captures their attention very, very quickly. It's the equivalent doing window dressing in your shop. Now, window dressing, I think, is something that is disappearing to a large extent. It's something that clothing stores still do, but most businesses don't window dress in the same way that they did in the sort of 50s and 60s. But window dressing can be very effective when it's done the right way. However, when it's a couple of balloons and some streamers and, you know, go the mighty Hawks written up in your window, not so effective. So if you're going to do it properly. Don't do it half-assed.
Yeah, indeed. Hey, just going back to the sidewalk chalk, the pavement chalk idea. When I was in Australia a couple of years ago, I was up in Noosa, and I don't know if the shop's still there. I hope it is, because they had a fantastic one, which was just a little blackboard outside the shop, and it didn't have any big promotional sales message on it. It just had two words, and it said, "Nice shop," with an arrow pointing in towards the shop. And, you know, it was just out on the sidewalk there, and it was like, you couldn't help but notice it. You couldn't help but be intrigued. You couldn't help but be amused by it, that, you know, their entire message was, "Nice shop." And it encouraged you to have a look at it. You know, it's incredibly effective. And, you know, the cost of doing that must have been $10 for the chalkboard and, you know, 3 cents for a stick of chalk. It was a very clever one, and I rather like that.
It reminded me, I saw a food store with an A-board out the front. Picture of a really yummy-looking hamburger. I'm susceptible to a really yummy-looking hamburger. And the sign out the front said, "Hungry? In and out, 4 minutes."
Yeah.
So there's your problem solved. It showed you what it was you could have, told you it was going to be 4 minutes, and, you know, seriously, captured your attention. And if that was your problem, you were in and out in 4 minutes.
That's good, because that leads on to my one, which was another food-related one, in that I was on holiday last week for a couple of days, driving down into the deepest, darkest Dorsetshire countryside over here in England, and beautiful it was too. Driving past a pub, though, they had a chalkboard outside. It said, "Sunday dinner, only £8.95. And I thought, is that the best they can do? Is that their marketing message? They're telling me I can get Sunday dinner for only £8.95. I don't want to go in there to buy food that's only £8.95. I want to go in there to have a nice meal for Sunday dinner. And I don't want necessarily to base it on price. I don't want it to be expensive. I mean, not being a food snob, I'm not saying it won't be good enough. But that's their message. You know, they could have had a much better message, like the one you just mentioned there. You know, they're not selling an expensive product, probably, but they're describing it well. You know, these people could have done such a better message of what they were selling and why you would want to go in to have it, than cheapening the product, cheapening the public house on the basis that their food was only
£8.95. Yep.
Get the message right. You know, they had the right delivery mechanism. They just had the wrong message. And so just be careful with what you're promoting and how you're promoting it, really.
Absolutely. Hey, now we're almost out of time, so I reckon we've got maybe one more each. Yeah.
Okay, go on then.
So my one more is, remember that the sales process is before the sale, during the sale, and after the sale. And a lot of people, once they've got the cash in their hand, they forget about after the sale. And after the sale is saying thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let people know that you've appreciated their business. That opens the door again to being able to provide them with other information to then restart the next sales process. So always have a mechanism to say, "Thanks very much. We appreciate your business."
Absolutely. And that was drummed into me 25 years ago when I started out in sales. Yeah, I've actually written it down further down my list here, actually, David. The sale begins the sale. Do you know, I used to sell software, and people used to spend, I don't know, 10, 20, 30,000 pounds on a piece of software. It was business client, business software. And the number of times that other people in my organisation, the sale, that was it, then move on to the next one. The easiest thing I did was just send a thank you letter. That was before email in those days, just a thank you letter. And it was such a simple thing to do. And that became the norm, really, after that. And people remember it and does you really well. Now, similar thing, and we were kind of talking about this before, get people on a database, get people on the email list. When somebody's purchased from you, you know, if it's purchasing in store, encourage them to like your Facebook page. Get their email address, even better, because then you're in direct contact with them. You really want to be taking the sale as a means to getting the next sale. And if that can be done through effective email engagement with them, they bought something from you, can we send you some information on this through email, if you, or some other reason for encouraging them to give you your email address? You know, at that moment, they like, they've just bought something from you. So they're going to be in a receptive mood to do stuff with you. And then just send them a thank you email. Don't bombard them, but, you know, maybe in a week or two, or however long, or whatever's reasonable in your business mode, then engage with them and make contact again. You're establishing a relationship there. And that kind of goes back to numerous episodes we've had on this podcast before of building engagement with customers. And that's one of the best promotional methods you can do.
Absolutely.
Anything else there, David? I think we've quite nicely got to about a half hour point there, which is where we like to wrap it up normally.
Well, I think we might come back to this again next week, eh? And just finish this off, because I've got stacks more of things that people could be doing. I know you have too. We've discussed this before we pushed the record button today. I don't think we've even got halfway through the list, have we?
Oh, no. We whipped through quite a few of them fairly quickly. If anybody wants any of them expanding on a little bit more, we'll do that. But as David says there, we've got about another, 10, 15, 20 things we could mention. And if we did that, we'd be here in about another hour, which probably is not the best thing to do. Okay, mate, so let's call it a wrap for this week. I say we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Any comments, any ideas, any suggestions for what's worked for you would be super. And the way to do that is to visit our webpage at davidversusdavid.com, our Facebook page, facebook.com/davidversusdavid, or even good old iTunes, leave us a glowing review of all this, what you think of us. 5-star reviews, please. You can also drop us an email. David, you get various comments fly your way through LinkedIn, which you tend to use more than me.
Yep.
But contact us, tell us what you think, give us your ideas, give us your suggestions, we'll comment, we'll add, we'll bring you in. So, unless you've got anything else to add, David?
No.
And over and out from me at the end of this week's episode. So, goodbye from me here in the UK.
And goodbye from me here in beautiful Tasmania. I look forward to talking to you about advertising and marketing again next week.
Indeed. Take care.
You've just been listening to the David versus David podcast with David Pritchard and David Council, helping you get knockout results with your online marketing and advertising. Please keep in mind that the ideas, opinions, and information shared in the show are those of the hosts and do not reflect those of their past employers.